have a hard time not heeding that first line. Wake now my senses, hear the earth call. That's why I changed the title of the sermon at the last minute. That is what this is all about for me, is hearing the earth call. As a 12-year-old child in my rubber boots, one memorable spring day, I followed this call. It looked like a stream to me at the time, of course, from in front of my house and on down the roadside, down the back road, and then back into the woods again in a place well removed from our farm. I followed it until it joined up yet another stream, and I knew it was headed off down to the creek, French creek, spelled C-R-E-E-K, but it was pronounced crick. It wasn't really so very far that I'd wandered, but like paddle to the sea, the pull of the current was irresistible. I had to keep going far beyond my usual range. My cousins, the boys, had a tiny cabin in the woods behind our house, one I was only privileged and allowed to see inside once or twice. I was not welcome to whatever they did there. It made me realize that I needed my own place out in the woods where I could do my stuff, where I could be there. I needed to be out there. I've always managed to find places to walk in the woods where I've lived. When we lived near St. John's in Newfoundland, the property across the road was all trees, no houses or trails either. But Buster, our dog, and I pushed our way through the closely packed black spruce trees. We found the tiny bog pond way up on top of the hill, Dogberry Hill, and found the rock escarpment that meant we had to backtrack. Other times I've been able to strike out from my home directly onto long trails. The call of the wild is strong for me. Many of you already know how much canoeing and canoe camping has figured in my personal story. Years ago now, Al and I spent many happy weekends with the local canoe club, challenging whitewater and ourselves, and camping alongside the river. When that didn't seem to be sufficient anymore, I took myself off to be a wilderness canoeing guide in Quebec for a couple summers and then in Saskatchewan one summer. I was always looking for more wilderness time, more time in nature. I know I'm not unique. Many folks, many of you folks, have such an attraction to nature, to trees, even if they might block the view, or to birds and bears and all the other wildlife found in nature. Gardens, of course, are yet another way to experience nature. Many folks feel they need no church other than nature. Nature itself is cathedral enough. I finally came to the realization that for me, this attraction to nature was all about a search for God, divinity, the holy in my life. I don't mean the Orthodox guy, that old guy in the sky so vividly portrayed by some of the old masters. I know a different kind of divinity. It's something like the chant I used to sing so often. Where I sit is holy, holy is the ground. Forest, mountain, river, listen to this sound. I see the holy in the wholeness of creation, in the rocks as well as in the rivers. Theology is all about defining the relationship we have with God, meaning in the process we come up with some kind of idea of what God means to us. Ecological theology focuses on nature and spirituality. What does religion, your particular religion, have to say about the environment, and maybe especially about the environmental situation as it is today? As you might imagine, where one goes from there depends on your worldview or what your foundational set of values says about both divinity, if there is one, and nature. I've just completed a course on ecological theology from Reverend Dr. Sally McFaig at the Vancouver School of Theology. No, I'm not going to try to summarize the term in 10 minutes. I wanted to say something about where I'm coming from in all this theologically. I've already told you something about my personal background, my context. Most of my time in the outdoors have been relatively uneventful spiritually. Yes, we suffered one rather chilly hypothermic canoe trip in early May with the ice on Alberta's North Saskatchewan River. And yes, I experienced a truly mystical visit to the Queen Charlotte Islands by canoe, not kayak, 20 years ago this summer now. But mostly the magical moments have been forgotten in detail, remembered only nostalgically as good trips and good times. Some kind of spirit of nature has always been present, though. I say that I am a panentheist, that I see divinity in everything, not transcendent or above me and above this world, not pantheist as in many gods, but panentheist, wholeness within everything. Part of the time I wonder if, like James Lovelock, and as reflected in Joyce Poley's song we sang earlier, the earth is a sentient being, consciously responding to its world. Lovelock, who's written extensively about this, has come to understand that Gaia is the Greek goddess of earth, a very old goddess name. He's come to understand that the Gaia hypothesis is a religious as well as a scientific concept. Yeah, he started from the science side of things. He's come to realize that more than a fact to be proved true or false, this hypothesis is a way to view the earth, ourselves, and our relationship to the earth. He takes it, in other words, to be a metaphor. In my women's ritual group, we used to sing, "We are alive as the earth is alive." I hear this as meaning the earth is a life form, so I resonate with Lovelock's hypothesis. We too have life forms living on us, like bacteria, maybe lice or ticks if we're unlucky. Ruminants like cows or deer assume that there are bacteria living inside their first stomachs so that they will break up the tougher vegetation so that then their true stomachs can digest those bacteria. And we know that the deer ticks can carry bacteria and viruses, which can consequently nibble on us. Each of these creatures is alive and conscious. Why not the earth as Gaia? Is it too hard to contemplate a being fighting the cancerous growth of too many people on its back, using as its immune system sickness and pestilence? Maybe Gaia's immune system is like ours, on automatic pilot, and the plague or the AIDS epidemic is not consciously imposed like a shot of antibiotics, but something that happens automatically. Now, I've gone beyond Lovelock. He doesn't say anything about like that, but I always wonder. Another view of religion and ecology that rings a note for me is the ecofeminist perspective. Rosemary Radford Ruther writes, "Ecofeminism, or ecological feminism, examines the interconnections between the domination of women and the domination of nature. It aims at strategies and worldviews to liberate or heal these interconnected dominations through a better understanding of their etiology and enforcement." End quote. She believes that the myths and symbols both reflect and reaffirm the socioeconomic reality. The domination of women in the traditional Jewish and Christian theologies is related to a larger pattern of domination of and control over nature, as seen in the way control is wielded over land. Exploitation of the earth, like mining or forestry, is analogous to the exploitation of women, whether as the domestic servants called wives or as the recipients of unwanted sexual favors like rape. Ecofeminism sees sin as the domination of some over others. Redemption is not the promise of a spiritual equality in heaven, but a social struggle to overcome such unjust domination of men over women. And it goes beyond men over women. Goes to the unjust domination of some people over others, other people and other natural denizens of the earth, and indeed the earth itself. Ruther believes that real salvation comes after we dismantle the economic system that distorts so wildly the just and fair distribution of wealth and power. A relatively few people, most of us included, have more power and wealth than the average citizen of the world. Paradise, in her vision, would not be free of tragedy or death, but would rather be a community of mutual life-giving where we can hold one another in the celebratory and tragic moments of our lives. She says that, quote, "This is the vision of an ecological hope freed from false escapism," end quote. False escapism I read to mean heaven. Ruther is a Catholic theologian. Earth justice, then, is more than an abstract idea that we need to keep old-growth forests from being cut down for the sake of a few spotted owls. Ecological theology is more than, where is God in this picture? It's all about the future of the earth, its ecological future. It's about ecological justice. Thomas Berry, another writer in this field, believes that what we need is a new creation story, a new cosmology, a new way of explaining how things happen. He means a creation story that has evolved out of scientific creation theories, but with a mystical bent. He wants us to have a new paradigm, a new model for how the world should be. A world that follows ecologically sound practices and economically just ways of relating among people. This is one way that religion can evolve, can contribute to our world's future. Yes, religion can be practical. A way forward out of our utter cancer-like presence on this planet is offered in what's called the Earth Charter. I first saw this document years ago and wondered just how much pie in the sky the authors were eating. It's an ambitious and rather concrete blueprint for how we might live on Earth, protecting both nature and people. It emphasizes democratically run society, sustainability, and social, gender, and economic justice. A culture of peace and tolerance and sustainability is the overarching goal. The Earth Charter is a global ethic in that it is a set of universally applicable values and norms. The Unitarian professor, Dr. Ronald Engel, has been intimately involved in the lengthy and worldwide consultative process of its drafting. Engel calls this Earth Charter a covenant. He says, "The heart of the Earth Charter covenant is the affirmation that all citizens of the world must covenant to work together for the common good of the biosphere, for the flourishing of the whole community of life." The Earth Charter is profoundly holistic in its vision of the evolutionary passage of the One Earth community, whose well-being and destiny is the ultimate end, on behalf of which responsible citizenship by all individuals and groups should be exercised. Like its predecessor, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, not all nations, not all national leaders subscribe to its principles. Not all countries have signed it, and I couldn't find on the list whether even Canada had signed it, or even some part of it, as described in the Kyoto Protocol. However, this is a grassroots movement. Folks as disparate as the Galliano Conservancy Association and the West Montreal Counseling Center have signed it. Folks like the United Church of Canada and the Religious Society of Friends, the Quakers, have signed on. And yes, the Canadian Unitarian Council too, and one or two Unitarian churches. The Toronto and Region Conservation Authority not only signed it, but they have used it as a tool in their strategic planning and in their education program. Through this grassroots organization, they hope to build support from folks like us, folks who might vote for politicians who might even keep the environment in mind as they govern. How does environmental protection and sustainability fit into your election list of issues? I do find myself discouraged at times. I know that such lofty ideals are wonderful, but I wonder that how much can be achieved, really. The market economy has us all well entrenched, and it's difficult to break out of our cultural mode. The ecological crisis seems too large for one person like me to tackle. And governments seem to be too beholden to big business to be able to do anything differently. One of our final readings for the course reminded me that there is hope for the earth and that there is something I can do personally. Roger Gottlieb speaks of a spirituality of resistance. He suggests that rather than be the victim of the engines of environmental destruction, we can choose to resist them as a spiritual discipline. Each time I decline a plastic bag at the grocery store, I remind myself that I do care about the environment. Each time I am able to take transit or my bicycle to get somewhere, I'm reminded why I do this. Each step of resistance I can take is a step on the path to environmental sustainability. Gottlieb says, quote, in acts of resistance, I go beyond my isolation, my self-concern, my very sense of myself as fully separate. And that sense of moving beyond my ego takes me not only into connection with the suffering others who are human, but with the more than human as well. End quote. Some of us, like our co-religionist on Vancouver Island, Betty Krosick, are able to take bigger stands, even landing in jail as Thoreau did for our resistance to the system. Gottlieb reminds us that in resistance we are able to hold on to hope. Hearing the success stories, however small they may be, reminds us that it is possible to make change. I believe that many people want to help. How many people have bought the new LED Christmas lights and the mini fluorescent light bulbs to lessen their power usage? I've done a lot of it. All these bits do make a difference, and not just to our own individual financial bottom line. I believe that my theology, my ecological theology, does influence the way I live, maybe not as much as I'd hope for sometimes. Engel writes that, quote, the modern sciences and the world's historic religious faiths are each able to contribute to humanity's ability to keep faith with the glory and the promise of this planet. He also believes that the ecological worldview and the democratic ideal can combine to serve as the new coordinating center for the plurality of creative, sustaining, and redemptive ways we may engage spirit, nature, and one another. I will close by returning to the experience of nature in this ancient Welsh poem. I am the wind that breathes the sea. I am the wave on the ocean. I am the murmur of leaves rustling. I am the rays of the sun. I am the beam of the moon and the stars. I am the power of trees growing. I am the bud breaking into blossom. I am the movement of salmon swimming. I am the courage of the wild boar fighting. I am the speed of the stag running. I am the strength of the ox pulling the plow. I am the size of the mighty oak. And I am the thoughts of all people who praise my beauty and grace. Blessed be.